play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Coming up on today's show, coverage of the main event of the World Series of Poker, which got underway Thursday at the Rio in Las Vegas. Plus, our interview with Kara Scott, the hostess of High Stakes Poker, who will also be pressed into service to do some coverage, some unique coverage coming to ESPN, both on TV and online, when day three rolls around on Thursday. One of the people who will be there in day three is my partner, Dennis Phillips, who is out at the Rio right now. Congratulations on making it through the first 2 days.
Well, I was one of the shortest stacks on day one, and I'm one of the shortest stacks on at the end of day two, but I'm in it, so we'll see what happens.
Not only are you in it, but you have slippers.
This is true. You know, everybody ridiculed when they came on with these deer form slippers. These slippers are good. I got a pair of them. I put them on. They're some of the most comfortable slippers I've ever worn. You see them all over the Rio now. People are actually, you know, checking them out, getting them. Though they're a hit. I would have never guessed it. Beef jerky and slippers. What a great way to promote poker.
Well, congratulations on that and making it to day three and also winning the prop bet against me for World Series of Poker attendance. Before we talk about your performance the first couple of days and how you've been doing, let's talk about some numbers here. Long ago, before this thing started, you got to choose the over-under. I did it last year. You got to do it this year. And you chose 5,273. As you'll recall, I snap-called on the under, and I was pretty confident that 5,000 was more likely than 5,273. And by the way, when we had Daniel Negreanu on, he took way the under on yours. He said only 3,284. Daniel was wrong by more than 50%. The final total, 6,865 runners, making it the third largest main event field in history, surpassing the one you were in.
You're off. Cut it
by
off.
21 players. So this is now the third largest ever. 2006 was number one with 8,700. Last year's field had 7,300. So they're down about 6%. In a year when everything else was up, we knew the main event would be down, but we didn't know it would only be down 6%. Are you stunned?
I am absolutely stunned. And I'll tell you how a lot of the people got in there. Since they couldn't do the online, since there weren't the qualifying that there were the previous years, the mega satellites here went through the roof. On Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, they had 780 on the first one and then more than that on the next two. $1,000 buy-in, and they're qualifying 75 to 80 people in that tournament for the main event.
Wow.
I don't know how many they did on those megas in those last few days. I would guess 700 or 800 probably, because they were running them three times a day.
Yeah.
That's just unbelievable.
That is remarkable. I mentioned that main event attendance was down 6%, but overall, this is the most popular World Series ever. Total attendance for all 58 events up 3.7%. Jess Wellman at Bluff had an interesting stat on her blog. She said, of the 75,672 total participants in this year's World Series of Poker, that is seven times the number of athletes who participated in the Summer Olympics in 2008. Seven times more poker players than Olympic athletes, and yet the Olympics get nonstop coverage from mainstream media, and poker turns out 75,000 people to play our game in one city in one summer. It's frustrating.
Yeah. Well, bad, but I do appreciate you comparing me to an Olympic athlete.
Well, I didn't compare you to an Olympic athlete. Just the numbers here. Also, the payoff this year for the main event, first prize will be $8.7 million, down a little bit from what Jonathan Duhamel took in last year. If you cash, you'll get just over $19,000. If you make the final table, you'll make at least $750,000. If you make the final eight, you will be a millionaire this year. So the big stack now, after day 2A yesterday, and they're playing 2B right now as we speak, The big stack is a Russian with about 478,000 chips. I can't pronounce his name, so I'm not going to try. Average is about 91K. Where are you?
I have 45,000.
Moo. That's not good.
Well, no, it isn't. I started out the day with 21,000. I actually chipped all the way up to 100,000 and then ran into a couple of coolers later in the day. But I got 45,000. By the end of today, there will be about 1,800 left. I talked to Seth about it. That was his guess, is 1,800. So I will be one of the last 1,800, and then we'll just see how it goes.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your experience. I know you played with somebody famous yesterday. Before we even talk about that, tell us about Saturday when you played on day 1C. How was the field? What was the feel of the tournament that day?
Actually, it was an enjoyable feel. It really was. To get down and really start grinding it, every table filled, everybody you could even think of that ever played poker, it seemed like, was there. You go table to table to table, and there's always a pro at a different one. And it was just enjoyable and a good time, and it's something I look forward to every year. And it is some great poker. Unfortunately, I went through 10 hours with never catching a straight, never catching a flush. I flopped two sets, one of which cost me $12,000. It just was one of those days. But by the end of the day, I still had a little over $21,000, so I wasn't going to complain.
Yeah. Run into any big-name pros or any really tough competition on Saturday?
Actually, the table I was at was table 5 and never got busted. We brought some other people in, but not really any named ones at my table. I mean, I talked to Jason Alexander. I talked to Brad Garrett. I talked to a mess of the other guys that are out here, but none of them at my table, so which was fine with me, to be honest.
Well, that changed a little bit yesterday, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, just a little bit. little bitty guy by the name of Paul Pierce was at my table.
That would be the captain of your Boston Celtics.
Yeah, minor little guy, let's see, a 9-times All-Star, now 3rd on the all-time Celtics scoring list behind two other no-names, Larry Bird and John Havlicek. A bit of a good basketball player. He's a shoe-in Hall of Famer.
Now, here's something interesting. My friend Larry sent me a text yesterday when he saw online that you were sitting at the table with Paul Pierce at the feature table. He wanted to watch it, but the ESPN online coverage doesn't start till Thursday, so he wasn't able to do that. But he texted me with this question. In the World Series of Poker, do you think more people know who Dennis Phillips is by sight or Paul Pierce?
That question actually came up at the table. And the answer, the dealer said, this is probably the only place in the world where more people know you than know Paul Pierce.
I think that's the truth. How is he as a poker player?
Actually, he's pretty solid. He's only played for the last couple of years. He played solid. He tried to be aggressive. He actually had a pretty good chip count. He busted out late on day 2. I think it was on the last level even. But he made a couple of rookie mistakes. He needs some more training, some more experience. But if he keeps at it, he'll be a very good player.
All right, now let's talk a little bit about one particular hand that you played yesterday, which I read about online, and you can give us some details on this. A hand where you held king queen, and you had to make a huge decision on a very wet board, and by wet I mean draw heavy or very tough. Here's what I read. You can correct me if I'm wrong. It was a board with 3 spades plus a straight draw plus a paired board, king of spades, 10 of spades, 9 of spades, 9 of diamonds, 8 of clubs. So can you remember that hand, and can you tell us something about it?
Can I remember it vividly, every second of that hand? There was an early raiser, a caller. I looked down at king queen. I was in one of the blinds, so I called. Flop came king up. I checked. Guy made a continuation bet. The other guy also smooth called, so I smooth called it. Turn card, put the third spade up there. Gentleman again bet out. The other guy folded. I looked at it. It was going to cost about 25% of the chips I had left just to call it. With the king queen, I had a gut shot for the straight. I did have the top pair. I didn't think this guy was very strong at all, so I went ahead and called it. River comes, puts even more cards out there. I checked it, and this is what he did, Paul. He grabbed a stack full of oranges, that's the 5,000, flung them out there as though he didn't give a damn, about 35,000 of it, I think, which more than put me all in, stared at me, covered his mouth, and started breathing heavily.
Mm.
I went in the tank because it was my tournament life, and all I had was a king.
Yep.
I mean, if he has ace-king, I'm killed. If he has a flush, I'm killed. If he has a straight, I'm killed. If he has the trips, I'm killed. If he has two pair, it's just an unbelievable amount of hands that could beat me right there.
Yep.
But I'll tell you what, you got to go by your instincts sometimes. And I called, and he wilted. And I turned over the king, and Paul Pierce and the guy next to him both looked at him and said, no way. They thought, literally thought, I had a straight and didn't know whether to call with the straight.
Mm-hmm.
I would have instantly called with a straight. No doubt about it. Another guy said, I thought you had a tiny little flush, you know, two little bitty spades, and didn't know if it was good or not. Uh-uh. All I had was a king. And it was my tournament life, and the guy mucked instantly.
Now, from what you're telling me, it sounds to me like you went in the tank, but you kept your eyes on your opponent, which means we talk so much about live tells on this show, and you've described how the guy was giving you the big stare and was covering up and was breathing heavily. For our listeners who, again, and like I said, we talk about live tells on this show all the time, can you describe a little bit of why you see those things and decided he's not as strong as he's pretending to be?
Well, you have to train yourself to do that. Again, I've said this 100 times on the show. There are an awful lot of very good players out there. But if there's like 10 different categories, you have to be adept at all 10 of them. You know, it may be in betting patterns. It may be in tells. It may be in starting hands. It may be who knows what. But, you know, you've got to be adept in all of them. And tells can be a big, big portion. If I had not stared at the guy, if I had not picked up on those tells, the prudent thing to do there would be to muck. It mm-hmm. absolutely would, because this was my tournament life. If I call there and I'm wrong, I am out of the tournament. I get up and walk out of the reel. So it was a huge decision. But I'm telling you, this guy did everything in the world to get me to call. If he was sending reverse tails, I want to hire this guy as a teacher.
And there's a lesson, you know, when we talk about these sort of things. And I want to mention a guy by the name of Joe Navarro, who we had on the show a few months ago. And we've talked about Joe because he is a former FBI guy who is an expert in behavioral reads. And he's turned his attention to poker tells. He has an e-book out now called 200 Poker Tells that you can download from Amazon for the Kindle and I think in other online formats as well. And I just as a little tangent here, I want to mention that when ESPN has their coverage online and on the TV telecast that will be on every Tuesday night starting later on this month, there is going to be a Joe Navarro feature on this. And I don't know if you even knew about this, but they're going to have Joe explaining some tells that you can look for all throughout the more than 20 weeks of coverage that ESPN will be giving to the main event. And I think that'll be a great new feature, an educational feature for a lot of players this summer and fall.
Absolutely, too. And I did not know that. That's awesome. Some of his tells, I mean, all he has to do is give the basic ones. He doesn't have to get in detail, doesn't have to go into a lot of it. If he can just cover the top 10 or 20 of them and show examples of it there, that would be just absolutely awesome.
Yep. So there's something to watch. Congratulations on reading the guy's tells that you were in yesterday. By the way, there's a little kicker to this story in that you ended up with more chips than you were supposed to get, according to Poker News. Do you know this story?
Oh, really? No.
Yeah. Poker News says that when you counted out your chips and you counted them out multiple times before you made your read,
right?
Before you made your call, you counted out 12,400. But when the dealer counted it out, the dealer counted 13,900. Apparently what happened was they counted stacks of green as 1,000. You had two of them, so she counted them twice as 1,000 when they were supposed to actually be only 500s. I'm sorry, you had three of them, so you should have gotten credit for 1,500 chips there. You got credit for 3,000, so instead of getting 12,400, you got 13,900. That's according to Poker News. Now, you were there, and I guess nobody at the table noticed or said anything.
Believe me, when he mucked it and everybody saw it, all we were talking about was the king, queen, and everybody was congratulating me and such a great read and all this other stuff. I have no idea what went on with the counting of the chips. I couldn't have told you anything about that. Wow.
Yep.
Sorry about that. I had no idea.
Well, it's not your fault. It's not your fault, and if nobody at the table noticed it, you know, the hand is over and done, and there's nothing they can do about it, which is why I waited until today to ask you about it. This is the
okay.
Final Table Poker Radio Show. Dennis Phillips is at the Rio in Las Vegas, where he's made day three of the World Series of Poker. He'll play next on Thursday. I'm Paul Harris at the feature table here at Harrah's St. Louis, and I've got some exciting news for Harrah's and St. Louis poker players coming up in a little while, in addition to our interview with Kara Scott. A couple of other things. Another St. Louisan, well, there are a whole bunch of St. Louisans in the main event this year. Some of them busted out on day one. Some of them busted out on day 2A yesterday. Some of them are going on, like Dennis, to day 3. I read online that Nelly was out there, and he was involved in a slightly controversial hand. A guy in early position made it 500, and Nelly was next to act. But before he did anything, the guy after him put out 6,000 all in. He was short stacked and moved all in out of turn. Now Nelly is stuck in the middle between these two, and Nelly has aces. So Nelly, now for those of you who don't know the rule, we'll explain that in a second, but Nelly just called the 500.
Yep.
And then this guy's all-in bet stands, comes back around to Nelly with his aces. He calls the all-in, ends up winning the hand, stacks the guy leaves. But there was some controversy about whether the guy still had to put the money in after Nelly calls. Maybe you can explain what the rule is, Dennis.
The rule is quite simple. Any action you proclaim or declare will stand unless there is a change of action ahead of it. Now, had Nelly raised, that changes the course of it, then he can take it back and he's free to do whatever. But when all Nelly did was call, he didn't change anything, he just called, the guy is obligated then to go through whatever action he had declared. So it makes it very simple. All Nelly
yep.
had to do was just call, and the guy is stuck. He has no choice but to go all in.
Exactly right. Interestingly, I think if Nelly had raised to less than the all-in amount, the guy, who, by the way, had pocket fours, would not have been obligated to put it in. But because he acted out of turn, another classic
yep.
example of pay attention to the game.
Yep.
Pay attention to the game. Let's see.
100% right.
All right, a couple of other stories that I read about online. Number one, Tommy Vietas, who you know,
yes.
a very talented young athlete and a poker player as well. He decided he didn't want to sit in the chairs that are all over the pavilion in the Amazon room at the Rio. They can get kind of uncomfortable when you have to sit in them for 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 hours. So yesterday, during the day, he went to Office Depot and spent a couple of $100 on a really comfortable leather office chair, which he then wheeled in to the Rio and pulled up to his seat at the table, and they let him sit in that. They said, as long as it fits between the other players and doesn't move anybody out of the way, you can play in that. And he did continue to play in it. Unfortunately, he busted out at the end of the other day and rolled it over to the WSOP offices and left it as a gift for tournament director Jack Effel.
I like Tommy. He's a character. That's cool.
I did not know you could bring your own chair, but I do know you have to bring your own pants. There was at least one player yesterday with no pants. He was playing in just his underwear and a hoodie, with the hood up, by the way.
Okay, can you get a tell by the tint of his legs or something? I mean, never mind. I don't even want to go there. That's just so bad.
Boy, this guy is really excited about his hand.
Yeah, no kidding. There was a guy running around in a red robe and a red hat yesterday, too. I'm not sure why. And another guy had this big pink bra on. Again, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I hope they didn't get much coverage, to be truthful. It's just so ludicrous.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
You know, I just don't understand it at all.
All right. And one other odd story that I have to mention here is a guy by the name of Carter Gill, who is known for being a kind of a character, and I'm putting that in the nicest, most politically correct terms I possibly can. Apparently, after making it through day one, he was up in his room with a young lady. Let's just leave it at that. He gets into an altercation with her and throws her clothes out the window of the Rio. Now, this is shocking to me because I didn't know you could open the windows at the Rio. I've stayed there a lot.
Either. Yeah.
He throws her clothes out the window. She calls security. Security comes. They hear her story. They ban him from the Rio and all Caesars Harrah's properties, including the Rio. Now, this is a guy who had played day one and made it to day two. He was supposed to play day two, just like you, yesterday. But he's been banned from the property. So he tried to tweet a couple of times to Jack Effel to get some help. But according to Jack, the guy was told, look, there's nothing we can do about it. It's your own fault for whatever it is that you did that got you banned. He had 49,000 chips going into day two. The floor people opened up the bags, stacked them up, and he got blinded off, just like anybody else who doesn't show up for any round of poker. Every time the cards are dealt to him, his chips got blinded off, and he was done, never to be seen again.
Wow. I had not heard that one.
I hadn't either.
I'm not sure what he did up in that hotel room, but for him to be banned from all Harrah's properties, I think there's a second page to this story that we don't know about.
I think there's a lot more to talk about here. Okay,
right.
Now one other thing we have to talk about besides the main event is an event that took place last week, and that was the $50,000 buy-in Poker Players Championship. And the reason we have to talk about this is because of one Phil Hellmuth Jr. And we give Phil a lot of crap on this show. And in fact, in our Kara Scott interview that we have coming up, we get into it a little bit about something that happened early on in the WSOP with Phil Hellmuth and Johnny Chan in the grudge match. You'll hear that in the next half hour. But I do have to give Phil some props here at the end of the main event for his terrific performance coming in second at three final tables, including second in the 50K Poker Players Championship. Now, Phil, of course, has 11 bracelets. He was really desperately hoping to get number 12. And at one point when he was heads up with Brian Rast, they started relatively even, but then Phil started chipping up and playing really well and got it up to a 17 to 2.5 million lead. And then Phil started playing around with some flush draws, which is unusual for him. And at one point, Brian Rast evened up the chips and then pulled a little ahead. And then they got it in with a flop of Jack 10-9 with two diamonds. Brian Rast had king-queen. He had flopped a straight. And Phil had the eight-deuce of diamonds. Before anybody says, what's he doing with the eight-deuce of diamonds? It's heads-up play. He gets it all in with a diamond draw there, which to me is very unlike Phil Hellmuth. He loses the hand. Brian Rast wins it. It's his second bracelet of the summer. Phil comes in second. He is the leader in the Player of the Year race, but still quite a disappointment. But still, we really have to give the guy props for this incredible summer, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. He's kind of the talk of the WSOP. Everybody's been giving Phil a hard time for a number of years. All 11 of his bracelets were in the no limit, nothing else. You know, he didn't do well in a number of cash games that have been shown on the TV. Everybody was giving him a hard time. You can't do that now. To make three final tables is phenomenal. To finish second three times is unbelievable. And all he did was pad his own records. He now has more caches and more final tables than anybody in the history of the WSOP, and nobody's even close to him.
Now, here's one question. Has this erased the perception that Phil Hellmuth is only good at No Limit Hold'em?
I hope it has. Don't know, to be honest about it. He's still going to get a lot of talking about it. I don't think he's still going to get any credit for his cash game play, but surely, after running this deep in these other tournaments, playing things other than the no limit. Now, Phil did, for the last 3 or 4 months, try to sharpen up his game out there. He went out and he started playing a lot of the non-Texas Hold'em type events. And he did, you know, I don't know how you'd want to say it, but, you know, he did get some coaching. He did do a lot of practice. He was really working hard at his other games. And it's paid off. So, you know.
It also paid off for you a little bit. Didn't you pick Phil in your ESPN draft?
I am sitting on number one in the ESPN draft right now. Absolutely am.
Very nice.
And here's in Phil.
Here's something very interesting. This is Phil Hellmuth's first ever seven-figure payday. Isn't that amazing that the guy's got 11 bracelets and all those other caches? He's never had a million-dollar payday?
Well, most of his bracelets and everything like that came a number of years ago. He's not had a whole lot of success in the last 5 or 6 years when the poker boom has hit and when all of these huge tournaments have come onto the scene.
Yep.
So not that big a surprise to me, actually. Ton of caches, but a lot of them from back 5, 10, 15 years ago.
And I do have to give Phil credit for one other thing. The guy who finished third is a guy by the name of Min Lee, who has been playing in the high-stakes games at Bobby's Room at the Bellagio for at least a decade, possibly more. And after Hellmuth eliminated Lee in third place, he went over, he shook his hand, and leaned over, and because everybody was mic'd up, we could hear him say this online. He said, you are one of the best in the world, and these kids don't know that you've won more than $20 million here in Las Vegas. And then, as Ming was saying thank you, Phil decided to share that with the crowd there at the Poker Thunderdome at the Rio. He turned around and said, you guys don't know this, but this guy is a great player, and he's won millions. And I thought, you know, for Phil Hellmuth, who's always making it about him, that was a pretty classy thing to do.
None of that. I'll tell you an experience I had. Last night when I was leaving after we had finished bagging up the chips, a gal wanted my autograph, and I did. She said she was still in and playing. She played at Phil Hellmuth's table. And she said, I absolutely pulled off a bluff, the biggest one of my life, and I pushed Phil out of a hand. And then I showed the cards. And instead of him getting upset or whatever, he looked over and said, you played that extremely well. Well done.
Wow.
And he complimented her. And she says, I was expecting a blow-up. I thought I'd make TV from a blow-up, and here he compliments me.
One last thing about Phil that I do have to mention is that he almost missed day two. Yesterday, he apparently was in his hotel room and didn't know that he was supposed to play on 2A, and security broke into his room, or I guess knocked on the door, or whatever it is. They opened up the door, they got in and said, you're supposed to be in the World Series of Poker right now. His friend Mike Matisau had seen that Phil wasn't in his chair for over an hour at the Rio and had security go get Phil out of his room, and he raced over. I mean, he wasn't staying at the Rio, but wherever he was, he took back roads and raced there, and he got there with 15 minutes left in the first level with almost half of his stack down, gone. He started with 12K. By the time he got there, he only had about 7K in his stack. Here's the amazing thing. He ended up the day with 65K.
Yeah. That is impressive. I believe Phil usually stays over at the Aria. I would guess that's where his room was at in that.
Yep.
And I just wonder now, what kind of percentage, if he cashes, is Mike Matisau going to get?
whatever it is, Mike will need it.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
Okay.
Do we have time for me to talk about one of the other players at my table yesterday?
Absolutely.
Okay. Found out, we knocked a couple of people off our table, replaced by a gentleman. He was sitting there talking for a couple of minutes. We found out he was one of the people, and I use the word gentleman a little lightly there, who played in the ladies' event.
Oh.
And he tried to justify it, saying, well, it was a weak field, and, you know, he thought he could get some money out of it and everything. None of the regular excuses, at least I give the guy credit for being honest. It sounded horrible, but that's what he was doing. But then we watched the way we played, and we really didn't mind him being at our table either. So I'll describe the hand that knocked him out. When he sat down, he had, you know, 80,000, 90,000 in front of him. He had a good stack. But a gentleman to my right was a benefactor of that stack. Gentleman to my right raised it. Blinds are 4 and 800. He made it 2,100. Went around to this guy who made it 5,100. Everybody else folded. The original raiser fought for a minute and then went ahead and made the call. Flop comes a 2-4 king rainbow out there. First guy, the original raiser, bets out about 6,000. The other guy insta shoves 80,000 into the pot.
Oh my God.
I cannot, in my mind, come up with any two cards in the deck, other than two jokers, that I would insta shove in there with.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The original raiser had pocket deuces in his set. He called and got his chips almost in there at the same time as the first guy, who turned over a king-queen offsuit.
Oh.
And left the table. This guy was now sitting on $170,000 because of that.
Well, all I can say is that guy played like a guy who would enter the ladies' event.
See, he's a jerk.
He's a jerk and a bad player, and good riddance to him. All right, before we go to the break here and then do the Kara Scott interview, I do have to mention something exciting here at our home casino of Harrah's St. Louis. First of all, I was here playing PLO over the weekend. We had two tables of live PLO going all weekend long. And outside of when tournaments are going on, I don't know of any casino in America that gets live and local Pot Limit Omaha going as frequently and with such great action as we have here. You know, Harrah's has limit action, 3-6 and 20-40 games that go. They have no limit action of 1-2 and 1-2-5 that go almost every day. Now the Pot Limit Omaha has really taken off. We're getting more and more players to try the game and come and sit down. We did have one guy who came in on Sunday who sat down and said, "I've never played this game before," and he bought in for 100 and he played one hand. As Vanessa Russo would tell you, don't announce that to the table that you've never played the game before. It's fantastic that we're getting all this PLO action here, and I'm very proud of our hometown for embracing it so much. Also, I want to tell you about the cash shootouts they're going to do here at the end of August and September on the last Saturday of those months, August 27th and September 24th. They're going to do a double shootout like they did for the WSOP qualifiers. You buy in for 200, you beat your table, you go to the final table, you win the final table, you win $10,000, and everybody at the final table will get paid something as well. This is just like the way you could qualify for the WSOP, and they've had so much demand for this format that they're now going to do it as a cash double shootout starting at the end of August, and I'll be telling you more about that as we go forward. So some exciting stuff going on here in St. Louis, Dennis.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds like a great – I mean, I love those formats. Remember in 07, I think I finished second twice and third twice out of seven of them that I played in. And then the first one I played in for the 08 World Series, I ended up winning. But I love the shootout format, and just think on it. All you have to do is beat 18 people,
yep,
and you win $10,000.
Yep.
It's pretty sweet.
Pretty sweet. All right. Dennis is going to go on to play day three on Thursday. We'll have an update on how he does on next week's show. And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter as Dennis_Phillips. You can follow me as Paul Harrah's Show. I'm not playing, but I'm covering all of this stuff as well. And good luck in that. And when we come back, we'll have our interview with Kara Scott for you here on the Final Table Poker Radio Show, brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis and Homestead Financial Mortgage on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcasts on thechipleader.com.
Kits, does your granny lend you money? Well, this granny does. And right now, calling 800-GRANNY-8 will get you $50,000 for just $238 per month. Call 800-GRANNY-8. Get a low fixed rate and take a three-month payment break. That's 90 payment-free days to get your finances straight. Our customers are saving hundreds per month, and our friendly loan officers make it easy. Call 800-GRANNY-8 or apply online at granny8.com.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
We are happy to welcome Kara Scott back to the final table. You know Kara from her TV work on High Stakes Poker and the World Poker Tour, and this summer doing coverage of lots of events for ESPN and ESPN3.com, and also a spokeswoman for Party Poker. Kara, it's great to see you again.
Thank you.
So what do you do in your spare time?
Yeah, you know, I'm just lounging around most of the time.
Let's start with the newest gig, which is the online stuff. At the beginning, you and the ESPN3 team were doing the grudge matches and the 25K heads up.
Uh-huh.
And there was a streaming element, and there will eventually be the ESPN broadcast element. How did that go?
It went great, actually. It was really exciting to start with that. It was nice to kind of get my feet under me, and you know, because it's quite nerve-wracking doing live television, and I haven't done it in a while. I used to do quite a bit of it in the UK, and it was so exciting. You get such an adrenaline rush from doing live work that you don't really get when you're taping a show. I mean, it's still great, but this was amazing, and working with ESPN was a lot of fun. For me, it's kind of a dream. I started as a sports broadcaster, and to be working with ESPN is like... Yeah, it's awesome.
It's quite a brand, isn't it?
Oh, man. It's amazing.
It's kind of hard to go any higher, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I don't feel like I can. I think I've done everything now. So.
All right. So the live streaming worked out well?
It did, yeah. It was, you know, obviously it was a new thing that we were doing, and we're kind of, it wasn't trialing it for the main event, but obviously the main event is going to be where it really comes into its own, because we'll be following through the days from day 3 of the main event onwards. And I'm going to be on the live stream trying to keep everyone caught up with the stories outside of the feature table as well, because there's always stuff going on. You know, big names are busting, or people are having, like, arguments.
Or some idiot is barking.
Here. Yes. They are not getting coverage from me. I'll tell you that.
Thank you.
Yeah, if you wear a funny suit and you bark a lot, no way.
Let's talk a little bit about the grudge matches, because Dennis and I were there for the first one between Phil Hellmuth and Johnny Chan.
Uh-huh.
And we actually talked about this on the show a couple of days afterwards, because we could not believe how easily Johnny was dominating Phil.
Yeah.
Now, you were there and you saw the whole thing. Did you see the same thing we saw?
Well, yeah, and I was quite lucky. I was listening to the commentators in my earpiece the whole time as well, so, you know, I had that insight on it as well, and they're great poker players, and they were talking a lot about the strategy that was going on.
Who was doing the commentary?
Phil Gordon was doing it with David Tuckman, and I think Lon McCarron came in as well at some point, and there were a couple other guys too, but it was interesting to hear what they were saying about it.
I've done some commentary with Dave Tuckman before. Mm. I did it for an LAPT, did it for an EPT. In fact, I did it at the PCA also, and he's very knowledgeable, very insightful.
Yeah.
So what were they saying about Helmuth's play?
Yeah, I'm real curious about that. I know what we were saying in the stands, but we couldn't see any of the cards or anything. So.
Yeah, well, they were surprised. They were surprised at, you know, Helmuth's play. And one of the things I said to him afterwards when I was interviewing him was that it was an unconventional style for heads up. And it is, you know, I don't know many people who would play that style.
Boy, are you being politically correct? We were not quite that nice on the show earlier.
It's hard because, I mean, I've never made the main event final table, and I don't, you know, so I don't have the same poker background behind me that a lot of you guys do, and I am really hesitant to criticize professional poker players.
Okay, let me put this in layman's terms. Phil laid down in the middle of the highway while the cars were zooming by, and was
so
lucky
bad.
To only get bumped and hit every once in a while before he was finally squished like roadkill by Johnny Chan.
I feel so bad for him.
Have I pretty much summed it up, Dennis?
So
did I get it right?
No, speak
That's
English.
So
sorry.
Yeah, I just feel so bad for him too, because he told me that, you know, he thought he was playing game theory optimal, and I was like, oh, man, I don't know what to say to that.
Maybe.
I just don't know what to say to
that. Maybe that's the way you're supposed to play Magic the Gathering. That's not the way you play heads-up poker.
Yeah.
We were just absolutely amazed. We couldn't see the cards.
Yeah.
We could just see the actions.
That's true, and I couldn't either. So.
But when you see, when he finally re-raises pre-flop to Johnny, finally makes a stand, Johnny just smooth call it. Flop comes out there. Not a dangerous flop. It was a very low flop.
Yep.
Like a 9-high flop or something like that. I'm up in the stand saying, he's got to bet out. He's got to bet out. If he doesn't bet out now, he's given up the whole match. He's got to bet out. And he checked. I went, what? And then when Johnny bet, he folded. It wasn't like he was trying to trap or he was going to check raise him. It just, I shouldn't be guessing or second guessing Phil Hellmuth either. Obviously, the guy's got bracelets. He's been around for years and years. I, I, I just did not understand it. I guess that's the politest way to put it.
Yeah.
To
maybe
me, it did not make sense.
It's not his game, you know?
I don't know.
I just want to say right now, we're not changing our policy. We are going to continue to second-guess Phil Hellmuth. We have been doing it for 2.5 years on this show, and we're not stopping now. Especially when we see him do that. And by the way, when you see this on ESPN, when will the grudge matches air? Do you know?
I believe it's in July. I believe at the end of July.
End of July. It'll be the first thing that airs as part of the Tuesday night series?
Yeah, as far as I know. Yeah.
Well, when you watch this, I think you'll have the same reaction we did, which was, what the?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was taught how to play heads up by a fantastic online player who, you know, he plays great heads up, sit and goes. And he was the guy who coached me for the NBC heads up the first year when you and I played Denison.
Uh-huh.
Brian Pellegrino. Fantastic player, and none of what I saw would have fit into, you know, his theory of good heads up poker.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
then, like I said, I am hesitant to criticize because it's not my, you know, I'm the host, not the commentator.
Right.
And I got to ask questions of these people for like the rest
there
of my career.
Yeah.
They need to give me interviews.
All right, so then I should say all the things that I have said. Kara didn't say any of them.
Well, and one thing to. Not to justify, because I still don't think it was any justification, but you're playing Johnny Chan.
Yeah.
And to be truthful, nobody wants to play conventional poker against Johnny Chan because he's one of the best in the world, period.
Yeah. Good point.
So if you're trying to do something different, maybe it just didn't work. Maybe he was going a little bit out in left field and trying something. You know, okay, it didn't work. Maybe I'll give him, you know, credit for trying to do that. But I don't want to face Johnny Chan. I don't know of anybody in the world that wants to sit across one-on-one with Johnny Chan.
You're right.
Johnny
effing
Chan.
Yeah.
I won't swear on your radio broadcast.
Thank you. This is the Final Table Radio Show. We're at the World Series of Poker in Las Vegas. Dennis Phillips with Paul Harris and our guest Kara Scott. Mike Sexton wrote a piece a couple of months ago, and he said, you know who would be the best person in the world to win the main event? In terms of the best person for poker, Kara Scott. And then we find out you're not playing the main event because you're going to be covering the main event.
Yeah.
You must have heard about and read the piece. What did you think of what Mike said?
Man, I was blown away. I love Mike, and I am really happy to work with him. I've learned a hell of a lot from him in terms of poker and broadcasting as well. I've really enjoyed working with him. And to read something like that by someone that you really respect, it kind of brought tears to my eyes. I'm not going to lie. It was like, I was overwhelmed. I was really overwhelmed. It was a nice thing to say, and it made me really grateful that I think I try really hard to put forward an image that is, I would hope, good for poker, you know, accessible, and, you know, I'd love to see more women come into the game, and hopefully I appear friendly and welcoming and all of those things, and to have that kind of confirmed in an article like that was super. It was so nice.
If you had to pick one person in poker to give you an endorsement, I can think of nobody better than Mike Sexton.
Yeah.
Who in the entire industry doesn't respect Mike Sexton?
Yeah.
So true.
So when he says things like that, they resonate.
And by the way, he's right. You would be fantastic. You already are fantastic for the game, but it would be tremendous for on so many levels, not just to get women involved, but also to show the world that we're not just a game that 22-year-old guys who live with their parents and suddenly become multimillionaires play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it's a legitimate job as well as a pastime and hobby for so many people, but this is legitimate, you know, and it would be great for more people to see that. And I hope that people make the final table who are able to put forward that, you know, every man, every woman stance. You know, this is something that you don't have to be embarrassed about doing, playing poker. You can tell your family you do it. You know, they can be proud of you for doing it. My family are very proud.
Yeah.
So I would love to see that. I'd love to see a final table stocked full of people who are good in front of the camera as well, quite comfortable, able to talk, and really put that view out there that poker is totally normal.
Well, if you don't mind my saying so, Dennis, you have been that guy over the last few years. When you got there in 08, you took that everyman thing and put it out there, and you've been, you know, not just through this radio show, but with everything else that you've done, you've been an ambassador for the game. So you've been great for it.
Yeah.
Although,
well,
Kara's much better looking.
Well, there's no comparison there. But let's say, me look in a mirror, me look at you. No problem. I can decide that real easy. But no, well, thanks, Paul. But I mean, it's a game I love, a game I enjoy. You sit down at the table, and I've said this before, you have a chance to make 9 new friends.
Yeah.
It's a great time. It's relaxing, it's fun, and it's profitable. Let's see, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, I completely agree. I've had a great time the last couple of days sitting at the tables, finally moving over to be a player now that we're not doing the broadcasting, and it's great. I've met lots of really nice people. I mean, it's not always fun and games because you're there to make money and you want to take their chip.
That's where I have to stop you. Here's Kara Scott on Twitter earlier in the series during the 1K.
Oh.
I'm quoting you now. If you have to point out what a badass you are, you're not.
I have not read this before. I love it.
Also, be nice to the effing dealers. Who raised you? And embarrassing players by pointing out their mistakes at the table makes you a schmuck and a complete idiot.
Yeah.
Now.
Amen.
Now.
I love that.
Kara.
Oh.
I want to know what lit that fuse.
Man.
Don't name him, but there had to be somebody that just really...
Well, there were a few people, one in particular who is a fairly well-known player, but is also well-known for really being mean to the dealers. And it's like, are you serious? And, you know, I was in an all-in pot, and I won, and the dealer was trying to count my chips to match it up to the other guy's chips. And this player was yelling at her so much that she knocked over the chips and had to start again, and then he's continuing to yell at her. And I finally was like... Okay, you need to stop talking, and you're not the dealer, and you're not the tournament director. Like, back off. It really upsets me when people are mean to the dealers.
Yeah.
And also, you know what? When someone is not very good at poker, and they're sitting down at a table, and they've paid $1,000 to be there, and that means a lot to them, A, don't be a schmuck and make them feel like an idiot. B, you don't want people to play better against you because you're there to make money. So pointing out where people are doing things wrong is like the stupidest thing you could do. And if you need to do it to prove that you're like a big poker pro and a badass, you're like such an idiot.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I've been having a great time.
I couldn't agree more.
No, I absolutely do. I'm not there to educate the other players.
Yes.
Frankly, I'm there to gather their chips.
Right.
There's a huge difference.
Totally.
You know, and the guys that sit there and berate them and try to correct them and say, well, you want to say, wait a minute. What's your purpose of sitting here?
Yes.
You know, give me a break. And not only the dealers. I've seen him mistreat waitresses.
Yeah.
I've seen him mistreat the masseuses. You know, you just don't do that kind of stuff. I've seen him, other people just standing. They can be so rude. I was at a tournament yesterday, and the table next to me, thank goodness not mine, there was a gentleman from another country there, and he kept standing up and yelling over to the sidelines to a friend of his. And then his friend came over, and they're sitting there arguing back and forth in front of the table. And the rest of the table's going, what the heck?
Yeah.
And the tournament director finally had to come over and said, you've got to leave. You either be quiet or leave. It was that bad.
Yeah.
Why do you do that?
Waste them.
Yeah, no kidding.
I want to go back to the berating bad players thing because I'm a cash game player, and I've had this experience several times where somebody lost a pot to somebody who sucked out on them.
That has never happened to me.
Right. Yeah, right?
If you play poker and that doesn't happen to you, even on a regular basis, then you're not really playing poker.
A bad beat, like with an ace king, never happens.
No, never.
But, you know, the guy hits a two-outer on you, or the woman hits a ridiculous runner-runner flush on you, or whatever it is, to then yell at them and tell them how badly they play in a cash game. If I'm another player at the table, all I'm thinking to myself is, if you scare that person away and they don't like playing here anymore because you're being a jerk, I don't get a chance at their money.
Yeah. Yeah, and you don't get a chance to get your money back.
I actually have said to a young poker pro, not a well-known guy, but a guy who moved to Las Vegas to grind out a living in 2-5 games or 5-10 games or whatever we were playing that day. And I'm sitting next to him, and he's in his mid-20s, and he gets into a hand, and the other guy just crushes him with a ridiculous catch. And this guy goes after him. And I look over, and the guy who he's yelling at has a wad of cash in front of him. And I'm hitting this kid under the table, trying to get him to stop. And he finally turns to me and says, what? And I lean over quietly and I said, are you a poker professional? And he said, yeah. And I said, you have to learn not to do this. Because that guy is going to get up and take his money and give it to somebody else.
Yeah, that is so true. And it drives me crazy. And even, I mean, it's not always easy to be nice at the table. Like, I played a day one, and right at the end of the day, I lost half my stack in a hand where I had turned a straight and a guy runner to flush. And it was annoying, and it was, you know, I was half annoyed. It was annoying. And the guy was sitting beside me, and he was trying to talk to me about it. And I was like, please don't talk to me right now about it, because he was going on and on about how he was right to call the, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know, I don't want to be, I'm not trying to be rude, but just please don't talk to me about it right now. And I bagged up my chips. And then at the end, I was like, you know, good hand, sir.
Yeah.
Good luck, everyone, tomorrow. And I left. But there's no point in making someone feel bad.
Right.
You know?
I love the first line, though. If you have to point out what a badass you are, you're not.
Yes.
I love that line.
There's a lot of so-called badasses in poker who feel the need to prove it. And it's just like, come on.
Yeah. Right.
We're all just sitting down at the table. We all paid the exact same buy-in as well.
Yep.
So whether or not you can afford it better than I can or he can or she can, we don't care.
Yeah. And those are the guys, and it's mostly guys, let's admit, those are the guys who, when they do get beat, not on a horrible suck out or something like that, but when they get outplayed by somebody and they get knocked out of the tournament, they played it perfectly.
Oh, totally.
I can't believe what that guy did to
me.
But he played so bad. I was playing so great.
Yeah.
Right up until that one point.
Yeah.
What's the story with high-stakes poker? I mean, in this post-Black Friday environment, there's been talk about a lot of poker TV shows going away. Poker Stars, the big game, is not going to be on in the U.S. anymore. It'll be on worldwide, but not here except on the Internet. And, Full Tilt had to cancel some of their TV shows. We don't know what the story is with Poker After Dark or whatever it is.
Yeah.
All we know is ESPN's expanded coverage of the World Series of Poker, but we haven't heard from Maury or anybody else about high-stakes poker, which you're on. So tell us the inside deal.
Okay. I don't know. I haven't talked to him about it. I think everything is probably so up in the air right now that I just didn't want to get half information. It's obviously a show that I love working on, and I really hope that it's going to be back again. And, you know, I think it will be, personally, but then I could be wrong. I really don't know, I'm afraid.
What did you think? Sorry.
Well, I read a couple articles about it, and people were just kind of looking in the crystal ball and making a guesstimate as what they think is going to happen. There were several shows that were actually in the can. The NAPTs from PokerStars were in the can, ready to be shown. All canceled.
Yep.
That's big revenue now that's been canceled. And that was one of those rare TV shows where they were guaranteed a profit because the sponsoring company was paying for the production. They couldn't lose. ESPN, Fox, whoever it happens to be, had to love these shows.
Yeah.
They were a guaranteed profit.
Mm-hmm.
That's gone. And not for sure what else is going to happen here.
Mm-hmm.
Now then, by the same token, Harrah's now announced next year they're going to have a $1 million table.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to televise it. It's going to be with a charity. Guy and Phil Ruff and some of these other guys are going to be there. That's got to be exciting poker. You know, who's going to pick that up? Can they get a mainstream person to come in there? Is there going to be some acceptance that way?
I think they've already announced that that's going to be televised on ESPN.
And I think that's going to be the real...
Slippers.
Yes, why not? Seriously, slippers and beef jerky, I'm all over
yes.
it.
Yes.
it works for me.
3 years ago, if you had to pick two sponsors, I'm sure those are the two you would have done. I want beef jerky and slippers.
It says poker to me. Totally.
Okay. I'm looking at Rolaids and,
I'll say it again. Where's Nike? Where's Pepsi? Where's Apple?
They're absolutely missing the boat here.
But it will happen. And as poker becomes more legitimized, you know, as things are happening with legislation, as it's, you know, becoming more and more clear that normal people play poker, there is not something seedy about it, I think that other sponsorships are going to come in America and kind of pick up the slack. And obviously, you know, in Europe, we're still running lots of shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, I was really lucky to work on the WPT out there. That was a lot of fun. And I do a lot of work for Party Poker, obviously. We still have loads of TV shows that we create over there. And, you know, it's, I think... It shows that there's an audience, and there's an audience here, obviously, in the States, so I can't see it not coming back.
I agree with you totally, and if you actually look, the point you make is very valid. If you look in the last week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, it's hard to see much of a difference. You look back a year ago, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years ago, and what the image of poker was and what was going on and how many people were playing it, it has changed monstrously. Since 2003, just look at the difference.
Yeah.
Huge, huge difference. There might be some setbacks. There might be some small little bumps we're running into, but eventually, I agree with you totally. This is going to be an accepted sport.
Mm-hmm.
It's played by millions right now,
and
it's just going to get more popular.
Yep, and it's worldwide.
Absolutely.
You can't just take out one little market or one big market of the States. You just can't do that, not permanently,
yeah.
I don't think.
Let me go back to high-stakes poker. What did you think of this last season, whatever number that was, where we had more amateurs like Phil Ruffin, the owner of Treasure Island, and Robert Croke, the Silly Bands guy, and some other... Men who have too much money.
Wow, they have a lot of money. Oh, my gosh.
Non-poker so pros who have too much money. How was that season from your perspective?
It was interesting to watch poker where you know, it was obviously going to be playing at a different level. And it was interesting for me to watch some of the pros either adjust or not adjust quickly enough to the fact that they're playing amateurs. You know, some of them lost, you know, mm-hmm. big pots against amateurs because they were trying to either outplay them or were thinking at a different level and hadn't quite adjusted to it. And I think that's really interesting because playing amazing poker, I mean, that's really great to watch. But playing amazing poker also means adjusting to your opponent. So,
right.
you know, for me, that was a lot of fun. And they were, man, they had so much money.
Yeah.
It was just crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
There were a couple of things from the season that that Dennis and I talked about on the show. One of them was a hand very early on between Vanessa Selbst and Phil Ruffin.
Yes.
Where she bets, and Robert Croak's actually between them mm-hmm. and hasn't acted yet, and Phil Ruffin raises a lot, like 3.5x at that point, out of position.
Yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't just raise. I mean, talk about tells.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, this guy can't wait to get it in. He is drooling at this pot.
Uh-huh.
And Vanessa doesn't believe that he's got a big hand and gets all of her chips in against a guy. And Dennis and I talked about this. When a non-pro makes a move like that, they are never bluffing. They're never raising light. And it was like she put it like 200K into the pot against him. And
it was huge.
He did that to a few of the guys at the table, too. I mean, I think he had a hand against Biffer as well, where it was like, no, he really does have a hand here.
Yeah.
And it's just, you just can't push him off of this pot. He's married to his hand.
Right.
You can't put a move on a guy who has no idea what a move is.
Yeah, or is definitely playing at a different level than these people were. And, you know, I felt bad for Vanessa at that.
Yeah.
And I think maybe she wasn't watching him closely enough or, you know, thinking about what it meant in terms of him being an amateur. And I think especially at the beginning of the game, that happened to a lot of the pros at the table.
We asked Vanessa about that on the show, and she said that she had talked to some people about Phil and his style ahead of time and that he was very wild and willing to gamble a lot.
Ugh. Ouch.
And that information came back to bite her.
Yeah.
But even if you have that information, you have to know, wait a second, at this point, this guy has the stone nuts.
Right.
And I can't make this move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he at least believes he has the stone nuts.
Right.
True.
Right.
Yeah.
He's not getting away from it, which is what's happened in the Viffer hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. And the other thing that really impressed me this season was the play of Phil Galfond. This guy is my new poker hero.
Yeah.
Only from watching him on TV. We had a chance to talk with him at the NBC Heads Up for a few minutes. But just watching his style of play, I think he might be one of the most intuitive and brilliant poker players I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
What did you think as you watched him?
I completely and wholeheartedly agree. He also did commentary for us during the 25K Heads Up for the live stream for ESPN3. And he is incredibly insightful. And listening to him talk about poker and watching him play poker are such a pleasure. And, you know, the first year I did high stakes, he came on. It was his second year on high stakes poker. And he had come back after, you know, a really difficult first season. The first time he came on, it just didn't go his way. And it was, I think, very frustrating for him. And he took a lot of heat for that. But the truth is, like, he's one of the best players in the entire world. Like, it's very hard to find a player that's better than him. And on top of that, he's a really nice guy. And on top of that, he talks about poker in a way that is incredibly relatable, very easy to understand, and just really spot on. Like, his commentary was fantastic. I think he's probably my favorite of the whole 2 days.
Well, the nice thing about it is you get somebody that can actually talk in terms that everyone can understand.
Yes.
You have other guys who are very insightful, really know the game and do so well, but they can't convey it.
True.
They start talking in abbreviation or mathematics or whatever the heck it is, and after about 30 seconds of him talking, you're sitting there nodding your head and not listening at all.
Yeah.
And that's always bad. You run into that, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
For him to be able to convey it to the average 1-3 player or 2-5 player, that's awesome.
It is, considering how high he plays, to be able to to make it relevant to people who are playing at much smaller levels.
So
amazing.
That's Kara Scott, the hostess of High Stakes Poker, which we do hope comes back for another season. She'll also be pressed into service starting Thursday for ESPN's online coverage of the main event of the World Series of Poker, which will also be on TV. The coverage will start at 2 o'clock Central Time on ESPN3.com, and then at 6 o'clock Central Time on Thursday, it'll also be on ESPN2. And then they'll have coverage on both the online site and on the ESPN2 telecasts from day 3 all the way through day 8. And then once November rolls around, they'll have, of course, the coverage of the November 9 there as well. And Carol will be a part of all of that. I saw some of the coverage of what she was doing earlier on in the World Series of Poker, and it's great to see her there. Lon McCarron and Norman Chad will be doing some of that. A guy by the name of David Tuckman will be helping out, and they've got a whole bunch of pros who will be part of that coverage as well. Bart Hansen and Brandon Adams and whoever else is not still in it who will be available to be doing analysis for the coverage will be a part of it. This is the first time, though, they're going to be doing the ESPN coverage behind the scenes. And if you're wondering how are they going to do it, will there be hole cards? No. There will be hole cards only after the flop in the broadcasts that are on ESPN2. And there'll be 36 hours of it there. But the coverage that's going to be online will be on a five-minute delay, and you will not see hole cards. You'll still hear the announcers. You'll still see the graphics and all that stuff. So, you know, hardcore poker fans will be able to watch that online starting Thursday. And again, our thanks to Kara Scott for joining us here at the final table. One other quick thing, since we talk with Kara every time we have her on and talk about how it would be great to get more women involved, I'm sad to say that this year only 3.5% of the people who played in the main event were women. 96.5% men, 3.5% women. We've got to find ways to get those numbers up. And that's it for the show today. Next week, we'll have more coverage of the main event of the World Series of Poker. By then, they will be up to day 8, which is the day they play down to the November 9 before taking their 10-week break and coming back to play it out for the $8.7 million first prize in this year's World Series of Poker main event. We hope that Dennis Phillips, my partner, has another deep run in that, and good luck to all the other St. Louis players who are still battling in it in day 2B today. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis, our home casino. For information on their tournaments, go to harrahs.com/stlpoker. And brought to you by Homestead Financial Mortgage. For great rates, call 800-GRANNY-8. This is the Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcasts via iTunes and on thechipleader.com.